Right now, we are joined in the studio by Mark Dorison, who is the chair of the Orange County Board of Commissioners. And it seems to be every single week we have you in here. More relevantly, the managing attorney for the UNC Center for Civil Rights, which is still on the chopping block following the Ed Planning Committee's meeting on Tuesday at the Board of Governors. Thanks for being here. And I would ask how you are, but we had the meeting yesterday and the board voted the way they did. So.
Yes, well, it's always good to see you, Aaron.
Yes.
It's certainly a highlight of the last 2 days, I will say. Yesterday we had the Board of Governors Education Planning Committee met, and although it wasn't surprising, it was no less disappointing and really frustrating, almost infuriating, to be there and listen to the discussion, which was once again filled with a lot of misrepresentations and inaccurate statements about the center. The committee voted 5-1. I was very glad to see Anna Nelson, who's the chair of the committee, voted no. But five members voted in favor of it. And so now the proposal to ban any advocacy will be going to the full board on September 8th.
Right. And this was not an unexpected vote, but as we were saying before we started, still really disappointing to actually watch it happen.
Exactly. You know, and we've talked about this several times, so not to beat it to death, but you know, we continue to hear the same, you know, just falsehoods and, you know, outright lies about the center, that we're state-funded lawyers, that that when we bring a lawsuit, it's the university is suing somebody or the law school, that we prey upon local governments and cost them lots of money, and just really is wrong on every level. And you know, we obviously, the center raises all its money privately. We don't get any state funds. We're not taxpayer funded lawyers. Like every lawyer in the world, you know, we don't sue people. We represent clients. In our case, primarily African American, moderate wealth, low wealth neighbors, families, communities who are fighting against discrimination. When we had a case against the Pitt County School Board, it wasn't UNC Law School versus Pitt County or the UNC system or the Center for Civil Rights. It was the Committee for the Education of Black Children and four individual plaintiffs who were parents of children in that school system.
And what are some of the, and we've talked about this before, but for people who are just joining in on this conversation, what are some of the cases that the center has helped out with that have been successful, where a difference has actually been made?
Well, there are several that I could point to. I mean, one that the Board of Governors continues to bring up is a case we had in Brunswick County, North Carolina. We represented the Royal Oak community, which was a historic African-American community that had been burdened with a series of hazardous and unwanted land uses in their neighborhood. The county decided it was going to double the size of its landfill, go right up to the edge of the community. The residents of that community tried to, you know, organize, they protested at the county commissioners, but their pleas were ignored. And so we got engaged. We represented them in front of the planning board and then in a lawsuit, and which was eventually settled. And not only were they able and successfully stopping the landfill getting expanded, but because the county already owned that land, they decided to build an elementary school in that neighborhood. So really a great victory for the people. We not only stopped a hazardous use, but actually got some beneficial development in a community that had been dying for a long time.
Yeah.
We represented over 20 individual property owners in Halifax County who faced an increase in their tax values between 700% and 1,500% because the town of Roanoke Rapids was trying to push this community out so they could bring some commercial development in. And we represented those landowners and were successfully able, again, with a settlement, to get their tax monies all refunded that they had been illegally charged, and also to get their property values put back to where they were supposed to be, which ended up not saving the whole neighborhood because several folks were driven out, but saved a core of the neighborhood.
Yeah, and this is one of the things that we were talking with Anna Richards yesterday from the Chapel Hill NAACP, and it really occurred to me in that conversation something that had just sort of been spinning in the back of my mind in the midst of all of this. But a lot of the motivation behind this policy is driven by, apparently, you know, these municipalities going to members of the Board of Governors and saying, "Help us out, we're facing these lawsuits," and the response has been, "Well, okay, let's target the Center for Civil Rights and try to shut it down as much as possible." The response really should be to go back to the municipalities and say, you know, this wouldn't be an issue if you didn't continuously violate people's civil rights. And the fact that this is such an issue really underscores the extent to which there are so many municipalities and state government as well that continue to insist on taking actions that either just straight up violate the 14th Amendment without even attempting to defend it, or at least go so far in that direction that a lawsuit becomes at least justifiable. And the fact that this is such a big deal underscores how important civil rights are and how far we still have to go.
It's a great point, Aaron, and it's one that really struck me while I was in that Board of Governors meeting yesterday and listening to the discussion among the board members. I mean, their approach is to completely read out of this discussion the clients and communities we represent. There's no discussion of the challenges they face, the discrimination that continues to persist across our state, the inequities to which these marginalized communities continue to be subjected, and the fact that there is very little access to justice for any of those folks.
Mm-hmm. And we're speaking with Mark Dorison again, managing attorney for the Center for Civil Rights. And I think the underlying assumption, I guess, behind a policy like this is if the UNC Center for Civil Rights goes away, then so would the lawsuits. And as you mentioned, it's not the center filing the lawsuits, it's individuals filing the lawsuits or groups and organizations with assistance from attorneys who work for the center. But is that right? If the center goes away, I'd assume it's going to be harder for those individuals and communities to file, in these cases especially, necessary and important lawsuits.
Without question, it'll be harder for these folks to find legal assistance and legal redress. You know, one of our principles at the center, whenever we bring any kind of legal action, is we try to partner with a law firm or another organization to try to expand the pool of folks who are engaged in civil rights advocacy. And we've been very successful in doing that and partnering with private firms in various cases. But the lawyers we work with on those cases, who are great lawyers and committed to doing pro bono work, are very clear that if it wasn't for the center, if it wasn't for the work that we do in the communities, building relationships, establishing trust, understanding the real priorities and needs at the grassroots level, they wouldn't be able to take these cases on. They don't have the resources or the expertise to do that. So it's not as if these firms who want to do pro bono work could do the kind of grassroots, what we call community-based lawyering, that helps bring these issues together, helps educate community folks about their rights, and ideally to engage local governments before we ever get to the point of a filing a lawsuit.
Yeah, because that's what you want, right? I mean, you don't want to have to file a lawsuit. You want the municipality to not violate people's civil rights in the first place.
That's exactly right. You know, the Pitt County case that I mentioned before, which is one of the favorites of the Board of Governors to talk about, when we first got involved in that case, our clients, the school board was actually being sued by a group of white parents who wanted them to stop trying to integrate the schools. And our clients, African-American parents, joined the lawsuit on the side of the school board. We were actually on the same side as the school board against these white parents. That part of the case got settled, and out of that, part of the agreement was a year-long process where our clients and other community members would sit with the school board and work on a new student assignment plan. I mean, that's the ideal. And it's only when those opportunities break down that you have to turn to litigation. The unfortunate thing is, had the center not been involved, had the folks on the ground not had at least legal assistance, they wouldn't have gotten a foot in the door and begin to get the attention of the local officials.
We're speaking with Mark Dorison, and again, the vote was 5-1 with one abstention in the Educational Planning and Policy Committee yesterday. Is that? Yeah, it was yesterday. God, it's been a long month already, hasn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
July was bad enough. this isn't a done deal. It goes before the full board in September. There's one more vote to be taken, and typically, and we've talked about this before, usually whenever a committee signs off on something, then the full board votes and it's a rubber stamp. In this case, it's a controversial issue. People are going to want to weigh in. There's going to be more discussion before the final vote. So is there any potential way to head this off before the final vote? I know some of the members of the committee yesterday, I think it was members of the committee, said something to the effect of, well, if it was the Julius Chambers Center for Civil Rights instead of the UNC Center, then we might reconsider. But is that a possibility?
Well, I think that was kind of a throwaway comment that someone made. I don't think it was particularly serious. But there, you know, the does have to go to the full board, and we'll spend the next 5 weeks really working to continue to mobilize supporters, continue to send letters, emails, to really push as hard as we can on the idea that this will hurt residents of North Carolina, the very people that the university is supposed to serve. It will hurt the university's reputation, it'll hurt the law school's reputation, and it really undermines the vision of of training law students to represent people who don't get have access to lawyers, which is a core not just of the law school's mission, but of the legal profession's mission.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see what happens on the 8th.
Yeah. And again, if you're listening out there and you want to weigh in any direction, I can mention the Board of Governors sort of catch-all email address again, public@bog.northcarolina.edu, if you want to send an email and you haven't yet to weigh in on this issue. Are there any stakeholders, like major stakeholders, who haven't weighed in on this yet? I know Margaret Spellings issued a statement basically saying that a vote took place, but Chancellor Folt weighed in support of the center, I think, later than Alpha Cravey might have liked, but she did. The dean of the law school did. A number of other people at UNC, academics, legal scholars, like a lot of people are talking about this, and they're all sort of in the same direction, saying this is a bad proposal. It's going to hurt the reputation, hurt the law school. Who hasn't weighed in that you would expect to say something, if anyone?
Well, and the governor even weighed in. In support of the Senate. Well, I have to say, President Spellings' statement was sort of a masterclass in not saying anything.
It was 226 words, by the way. I did a word count when it came out. It was 226 words of not saying anything.
Yeah,
right?
It was stunning.
It was good.
We were very gratified to see Chancellor Folt's letter, which was very strong. She also was at the meeting yesterday, mm-hmm. and addressed the board, which we appreciated. I think that as many folks as can weigh in would be great. It's disappointing that President Spellings didn't take a real position in support of the center. And, you know, we hope that people continue to weigh in. There was a very powerful op-ed in the paper over the weekend from Wade Smith, one of the leading, you know, sort of deans of the North Carolina bar, in which he spoke very eloquently about knowing Julius Chambers in law school and what his career stood for and what it means for the law school. So, you know, I hope people will continue to weigh in. Even if we think we know what's going to happen, I think we have an obligation to raise our voices and bear witness.
Yeah. And just to give people a sense, and I don't think this is something that we've actually talked about yet in all the times that we've talked about this, the Center for Civil Rights, how common is it at law schools, especially like public law schools like UNC? Is UNC unique in having a center? Would UNC be unique in not having a center?
Well, in some ways it's unique the way the center is structured, because it does have this tripartite mission of education of students, public research and public education, and then service to communities. But almost every major law school in the country has either centers, institutes, or clinics mm-hmm. that do direct representation of clients and do it in a way to train law students to get litigation and advocacy skills. And this would be a real setback in, you know, I think for legal education, which is why you saw that letter signed by 600 deans and law professors across the country. And I said this in the yesterday, but, you know, the idea that because this policy now has an exemption for specifically for established clinical programs. I don't encourage anyone to take any solace in that because of the ideological nature of this attack. I think it's just going to take one case that upsets somebody on the Board of Governors or their political ideology, and then clinics will have the next turn, you know, at the guillotine.
Yeah. Speaking with Mark Dorison again, anything else that people need to know about this particular issue? I know there's a lot to unpack here.
No, I think there's been a lot of good news coverage, and I and all my colleagues really tremendously appreciate the outpouring of support that's come from across the state and across the nation. I just remind people, if you don't know a lot about Julius Chambers, you should spend a little time reading about him. There's a new biography of him. I always tell students, if you vote, if you work, or if you go to school in America, you owe a debt of gratitude to Julius Chambers, who made all those things more equitable.
Speaking with Mark Dorison, before we let you go, put on your Orange County Commissioner's hat for just a second. What's going on in Orange County that people need to know about?
Well, the exciting thing is the federal government approved the light rail.
Yeah.
So that is exciting. That means that's going to be moving forward. That means we are now, you know, on track, all puns intended, to get a tremendous infusion of federal money for this regional transportation system. And I think really the work that everybody put in Orange and Durham to make this, bring this together and go triangle, it's very gratifying to see it moving forward. And that, we look forward to that process going on.
Awesome. Mark Dorison, thank you so much.
Always good to see you, Aaron. Thank you.